No, that's our new intro. It's recorded, it's minted. Hey guys,
what is up, Crip Nation? Good citizen of Crip Nation. We are having a good morning here. We are joined by Benny Hickok, the CEO and co-founder of Liquid Abs. You know, we've just been shooting the shit for the last 12 minutes and having a lot of laughs, and I just made a very interesting noise trying to start this episode.
Where did that come from?
I don't even want to start. I don't even want to get into it. Maybe it could be in the
blue. It's the morning.
Let's have a bloopers episode one of these days.
Anyhow, I've got something for that gastritis as soon as we finish. Or whatever that was.
Benny, thank you for putting up with us. I'll just start with that.
Yes.
Of course. My pleasure.
so
Benny's a survivor of Crypto 101.
So you're over in Israel right now. Is that correct? Tel Aviv?
Yeah, I am. Actually, in my office right now.
Awesome.
Our employees, like, it's 7 p.m. We're still working here, so.
Amazing.
I'm still young.
I love it. I love the dedication. And Pizza Mine and I are no stranger to late hours in the office. That is for sure. So Liquid Abs.
Of course. So thank you for having me, first of all. A lot of people in this space, a lot of technical people, are really familiar with how the internet is built, right? We have the ISPs and the protocol layer. We have the web services and the websites on top of it, the applications. We took kind of a closer look of how the blockchain was created, how it was built. We started in EOS, and I think that EOS is the most used blockchain today. That's what the number says anyways. It's the home of dApps in a sense, but a lot of the developers are actually on Ethereum. That's the biggest community of developers, but they're stuck because of scalability issues. So it was really important to us, since we're not maximalists in any way, to create the best interoperability solution we could think of to this middleware. So we have a mechanism in place to create this cross-chain decentralized solution, the transaction being passed in between these blockchains.
So yep, would you say, like, at a high level, like, the number one goal of Liquid Abs is to, you know, enable cross-chain value transfers?
No, I think that this is coincidental. You know, that's something that you can make out of this service, but I want to allow developers and users to use blockchain as it is the internet. Meaning, we do not know how websites work. You know what? Maybe Aaron does, but most of us do not think about the back end of the website. We don't know which servers the website is using. We don't know which servers the app is using. If a developer chooses to use Ethereum, EOS, it doesn't matter, as long as the dApp works and is cost effective and it runs fast enough and everything is decentralized and the integrity of the chain that you chose is safely kept. This is what we allow today.
So this sounds kind of like a OpenStack, but running on blockchain nodes, it's more decentralized. Is that correct?
It's one of the features that we can present, yes.
That's so cool. So why did you build this? What inspired you to solve this problem in the way that you've done?
It's a really good question. We started as developers. we were block producers of EOS. And before that, I was a part of the Bancor team and gotten to know Ethereum really well. On its pros and cons. And when I saw EOS, I understood the opportunity of this Web 3.0 ecosystem. And we really thought, me and my CTO Tal, my partner in CTO, that we should learn more about this technology. I know that there's a lot of criticism regarding EOS and governance, but let's look at this from a technology point of view right now. It is the best blockchain right now in terms of transaction cost and transaction speed. When we dug into the code, we saw that it's still not sufficient. So if we're talking about mass adoption all the time, you know, that's the key term that the blockchain entrepreneurs spoke of for 2 years. it's not really possible. Like, if I would go to a friend of mine, which is a developer, and tell him, listen, there's this blockchain thing, and it's really cool, and you should develop on top of it, the limitations will get him to tell me, you know what, let me know what you get better, because I can't do it like this. And we wanted to create mass adoption by building the infrastructure to allow that.
I think what you've done is really cool. But going off topic for just a second, but remaining on the topic of mass adoption, what's the crypto and blockchain culture like there in Israel? I know there's a lot of projects out there. I assume legislation's friendly. Are you guys in really hot competition, or is there a lot of camaraderie and trying to build Israel as the next capital for crypto? What's it like over there?
Really cool question, I have to say. Just a bit of a broader look of the startup space in Israel. The name Startup Nation is something that we hear a lot in Israel. A lot of entrepreneurs, the highest percentage of startups per capita in the world. So generally speaking, in the startup space, Israel is a bright star next to many other stars. On blockchain specifically, we are, I think, still in the baby steps. Like the largest, the brightest developers in Israel are yet to be in the blockchain space, but this is an opportunity as well. We have many companies that came from Israel. You have the R&D company of Bancor based in Israel. You have a few others that like Orbs that are in Israel. And I think it's getting more and more common of a word. A lot of corporates like IBM are actually basing their blockchain team in Israel.
Great conversation with a guy named Lou Kerner, who's very heavily involved in the space over there. So I'm sure you're familiar with him. And then my old buddy's Dav is based in Israel too.
That's correct. Yeah. We were like, it's pretty funny. Tel Aviv is the startup capital of Israel. Most of the startups are here, but even though it's really, really small, I'm talking less than a million in population, we never see each other, and that's how it is.
Guys are too busy working.
Exactly.
Late nights.
like today, I never left the office. we support each other. The conferences here are amazing. Lots of good people. And so answering your original question, I think that Israel can become a key player in the blockchain space, specifically with the amount of cryptographers and academia we have here surrounding this space.
I'm kind of curious about like the philosophy behind what you guys are doing in regards to, does blockchain or cryptocurrency solve any humanitarian problems in your eyes?
You know, I've been to Bancor before, as I mentioned, and one of the projects that I was involved with was community currencies in Africa. Talking about the economical aspect of tokens, there's a lot of things in behavioral economics that can be a real benefit to all of these poor countries, whether it's in Africa or any other place in the world. There is a research by someone called Bernard Lyotard. He mentions there community currencies are the way for sustainable, better economy. We started something regarding his research in Kenya and created a community currency based on blockchain technology. Back then it was Ethereum, and gave this to the community so they can trade among themselves rather than pay in Kenyan shilling, which is their fiat currency. And apparently, once you give them a means for trading, it makes the amount of transaction skyrocket.
Wow.
I'm talking like 10, 15 times a day once you have more transaction, the economy is actually becoming better and better. But that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is obviously monetary systems in general. How do you make sure that fiat currency or any currency sustain its value when we work and we make a lot of effort and there's labor involved? How do you make sure that by creating inflation, by the country creating inflation, you still get the same amount of money? Because you cannot control inflation when it comes to fiat currencies, right?
Right.
There is a central entity that does that for you, but you have no means as an individual to affect this. So I believe that Libra and Facebook coming with this, and the fact that they have so many issues right now with the issuance of their token, shows that governments understand this as well. They understand that there is something unique and something even frightening.
Yeah, there's something afoot.
Exactly, in cryptocurrencies. We saw like there's a lot of senators right now sending letters to, you know, credit companies and others that were involved in Libra before. It's really interesting to see, because one of the things that Libra is bringing to the world is actually education about blockchain. Many people have not heard about blockchain before that.
So I kind of want to talk a little bit about block producing versus mining. So I know that you used to be like Liquid. It was Liquid EOS, right?
Yes, it was Liquid EOS.
And you guys were like top five for a long time of EOS block producers.
Yes.
Do you think that DPoS, or delegated proof of stake, do you think that that is a viable consensus model? You know, if what would you fix and what would you keep the same?
That's a really good question. I think mining, the worst part about mining is the fact that a lot of processing power is being spent on something which is not valuable. Okay. No one cares about the solution for this equation, but it's an equation. Its sole purpose is determining who's next in line. And when you think about it this way, it sounds pretty weird, because, you know, when we were kids, we had a lot of other means to decide who's next in games and stuff like that. So I think that what DPoS has done is to vote for people that we believe will not sacrifice their name and reputation by manipulating the chain. And we have a way to check that no one manipulated the chain. So if you do, we can take you down. You know, how would you determine if something is decentralized? You know, Eyal Herzog from Bancor, he always says that if you can fork something, it means it's decentralized.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, I guess so.
So if you can fork DPoS, if you see someone is manipulating the system, it's decentralized enough. And by someone who has been there, okay, I saw what has been going on, what's been done, how is the government working, the people that were, you know, on the top 21. In a sense, it makes a lot of people uncomfortable knowing that there are only 21 block producers that are cycling and closing the blocks one after the other.
Because it kind of implies like an oligopoly.
But you know what? But what is mining pools in Ethereum and Bitcoin, if that's so?
But I think it's different in mining pools, because you have mining pools that are made up of all sorts of different individuals all across the world contributing their hash power towards a mining pool. So if a mining pool kind of goes rogue, or the mining pool operator, I should say, goes rogue, then individuals can withdraw their hash power from that pool, unless I'm misunderstanding.
Definitely.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. But you can still have a 51% attack using mining pools, because you do not know. Like, we assume what you just said. Mm-hmm. The assumption is that the computers are spread across the world and people can withdraw their processing power.
But there might be more than meets the eye.
That is correct.
Fair.
This is something that you don't know for certain. We know for a fact that there are a few mining pools in the world that operates today. I think it's for approximately four or five. So in that sense, 21, that you know who they are, is that better? Is that worse? I personally think that this was like a general note, but on a personal note, I believe that decentralization is a spectrum and is not like either decentralized or centralized. There's a gray area.
Absolutely agreed.
It's all about the tension between the two and how far away you are willing to go in order to sacrifice speed or sacrifice cost.
So let's move on to back to liquid apps for a second here.
If I can say one more thing in that sense.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
When you talk about interoperability in that sense, you can create a mechanism where a dApp will operate on Ethereum. Okay, all the logic of it will be on Ethereum, but the processing power will actually take place on EOS. And the transaction will be closed on Ethereum. And this combines everything. And this combines like the trust issue here with the, you know, solidity of some sorts on Ethereum. And that's what Liquid Link allows.
Do you have a friend who's interested in getting into cryptocurrency, but they don't know where to start building their portfolio? Well, we have the answer. It's called CopyTrader by eToro. With CopyTrader, you can automatically copy every trade of eToro's top crypto traders, just like myself or Bryce or Kevin, at the exact price point and in real time. No need to study up on markets or develop your own strategies. Simply just sign up and copy our trades. Any profits that we make, you do too. Proportional to your investment, of course. With eToro, you get access to the world's most popular cryptocurrencies with transparent trading fees all in one easy-to-use app. Copy the smart money with eToro. Join now at etoro.com/crypto101. I mean, there's so much you can do with this. What's the coolest thing you've seen built with Liquid apps so far?
It's called Moonlighting. It's a Fiverr-like application. It's coming from the centralized world to the decentralized world. It's a I think it's a company that was founded in 2014.
And could you really quickly explain what Fiverr is? Because there's probably a lot of people that haven't heard of it.
Sure. It's a freelancers platform allowing for people to kind of present what they can do, and other people or companies can take the services that the other people are offering, like designers, dev for hire, etc.
Nice.
They have approximately 750,000 users. A lot of them are daily basis users. And they're using the decentralized world now. They're using Liquid apps to facilitate their storage on EOS.io.
Wow.
And what they do, then this, I think the essence of this is a competitive advantage. I have one employee that was banned from Fiverr. I haven't asked why, but it's interesting. But it's interesting because even if you get banned from a platform, you don't want to lose all of your CV. You don't want to lose all the reputation that you assembled so far.
Right.
So this is why, if you don't lose your reputation and CV in the process, you know that you can. You don't even need to trust the system. You're signing in, no one owns your data, but you still have the front end of Moonlighting in order to interact with others. I think it's a really, really cool concept. And what Moonlighting did is something that I believe more and more organizations are going to do from here on out. And we'll have our own data protected from things like banning, changing. And it goes both ways, because as a company, if I'm going and wanting to find a freelancer right now, I want to know that the reputation that I have is legit. What I see is actually there. And I know who said what. It's good for the users, the freelancers themselves, and it's good for whomever wants to give them the next gig.
And so there's, you guys also have a token, right?
Yes.
So, and how does the token work, and how does it also like accrue value?
The name of the token is DAPP, D-A-P-P. And the essence of it is to incentivize this whole ecosystem that has been built, that is called the DAPP network. And this is kind of getting me to talk about how do all of these services come into play? Because Liquid Apps does not provide these services. We are a technology company. We build tools, we build services, and we deploy them to the world. And there are other entities, they're called DApp service providers, DSPs. Currently, more than 25 of them across the world. And they are the one that gives these services, that provide VRAM, vCPU, Liquid Oracles, Liquid Accounts, Liquid Link, etc. And the way this ecosystem is working is by, on the one hand, there's this token, which we did not give any cost, any initial cost. We did something which is called a reverse Dutch auction. The community is the one that chooses how much the value of the token is each and every day.
That's like how EOS did their ICO.
Precisely. This is on the one hand. Second hand, there are these DSPs, and they get to choose how much they will price each and every service. And there are the developers, the users of all of this utility mechanism. And the way they get service is by staking these DApp tokens to a DSP. For example, it's like going to a cellular company and wanting like a data plan. So you have, if you want the VRAM, which is the memory solution, the storage solution, you can have 1 gigabyte for X amount of time, and it will cost you a minimum staking of 100,000 DApp tokens. So the developer will go to one of the portals. There are about 7 portals that the community has built, and it will stake DApp tokens to a specific DApp service provider. And the system will take it from there. Everything will be happening, of course, on chain. At the end of this quota, the DApp developer will need to stake once more. It happens automatically, of course, but the essence of this is we created a free market ecosystem. No one is in control of price of anything, whether it's the services itself or the price of the token. And this is how, and the incentivation for these DSPs is by inflation of the token. Much like EOS, as you mentioned. The incentivation is being spread, the inflation, pro rata to the amount of DApp token staked to the specific DApp service provider.
It's pretty confusing, I think, staking and all that kind of stuff. I think it's just one of those things that as we move into this new world with Ethereum 2.0, it's going to become much more
clear.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
I think staking is just a way for you to receive service without losing any actual tokens. Like you don't pass along tokens. It's like putting it aside, but still in your wallet. That's why I don't like the word lending, but lending means that it actually goes out of your wallet. In this case, it's not. It's still in your wallet, but it's like locked. It's locked for a specific purpose. No one can touch it, for example. No one can take it from you, but you can't take it from the wallet either for a specific time frame. And this allows you to get services. So that's great. Okay, I'll lock this aside for services. That sounds interesting enough.
So it's really fascinating what you've got built over there. That's really a game changer for a lot of DApp development. And we've really seen, we're still waiting for that one killer DApp, but if it has cross-chain compatibility, it no longer has to choose really which one to go on. So I think this is a tremendous step forward. So let's take a step back for a second, though. What were you doing prior to crypto? And are there any familiar signs or trends from the past that you really think this is going to make this industry successful?
So I'm an engineer myself. My background is industrial engineering. I had a few companies in the past. I was focusing on startup back at the day. And I've seen many, you know, in many industries. Nothing was as fascinating as blockchain, I have to say. What brought me into this space is actually my wife. One day she told me, Benny, there are a couple of guys at work that talked about Bitcoin. Do you know what it is? I started researching. I created a report over this whole ecosystem. In 2017, it went public right before the hype. My adventures at Bancor afterwards. Blockchain is the first and I think only field that allows you to combine technical data or technical knowledge with behavioral economics, which I love personally. This was something that I really focused during my degree, and everything I read in my little spare time is connected to that. It's also about computers and people. And there's not a lot of spaces or fields that are combining these two worlds. When we talk about why blockchain, why I think it's the next thing, I believe that starting from the beginning of the internet, the first years of the internet till now, we've seen that the majority of money and power is at the hands of a few corporates that are gaining more and more strength now. And it's really, really hard for new companies to rise to these same fields. And I'm talking about Google, Facebook, Amazon, of course. And I think that the next phase of these iterations of technology is going to be done in a decentralized way.
Love it. No, I completely agree. And kind of just in closing, you know, what's another crypto or blockchain company outside of Liquid Apps, or let's say outside of Bancor, what's another company that we should be paying attention to? Somebody that's doing some really amazing, innovative work.
I personally love Effect AI. It's a company that said, you know what, we're going to take what we know from the outside world, labor that is being paid for. We're going to take all of the data from they're doing right now annotation, for example, of images.
Whoa.
On chain. And they want to allow for AI to exist on the chain itself. So people are able to create their own patterns, other things in a decentralized way. And in parallel to the current AI systems that Google is offering, for example.
Huh. On-chain AI, that's something I haven't really dug into, but it sounds super fascinating. I hope that the good citizens here at Crypt Nation go check that out.
I can't even wrap my head around that one. I need to take a nap. I need an adult. The AI has infiltrated our blockchain.
Well, Benny, you know, thank you so much for joining us and telling us all about Liquid Apps. If the good people want to follow you on Twitter or check out your website, where can we point them to?
Sure. It's at Benny Hakak at the Twitter and on Telegram. Feel free to PM me. And the website is liquidapps.io.
Amazing. All right, everybody. We will see you in just a couple days. We got some more exciting episodes coming out for you. Take care, everybody. And Benny, thanks for joining us.